Good afternoon. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Ahead this hour, Governor Asa Hutchinson is already thinking about winter when it comes to Arkansas and COVID-19. At his weekly press briefing yesterday, the governor set another goal for testing in Arkansas and encouraged continued mask wearing and social distancing. We'll have more from that briefing later on this edition of our show. Arkansas's new cases of COVID-19 up by 486 confirmed cases. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting an additional 131 probable cases for a total of 617 new cases. 12 more confirmed deaths from the virus in the state have been added to that total. It's now 1,060 confirmed deaths with an additional 149 probable deaths from coronavirus. A report last night from Northwest Arkansas Healthcare Community lists 97 new cases diagnosed in Washington County, 67 new cases in Benton County. That same report lists 46 patients in COVID-19 units in the two counties' hospitals, an increase of 8 compared to the same time on Monday. Arkansas Colleges of Health and Education in Fort Smith purchasing the former Golden Living headquarters and 54.5-acre property. Talk Business and Politics reports ACHE will use the 5-story building for two primary purposes, a health and wellness center and space for what ACHE CEO Kyle Parker says will make the entity the largest research institution of any osteopathic school in the country. The first floor is planned for the health and wellness center, the top 2 floors for research. There are now more than 150 employees from the Ouachita and Ozark St. Francis National Forests who have assisted in some way in the fight against wildfires in the western United States and/or helped with recovery efforts after Hurricane Laura. A press release from the forest indicates the assignments have lasted between 14 and 21 days. Tasks have included actual firefighting, coordination of meals, and communications. And the Arkansas Prostate Cancer Foundation and the Donald W. Reynolds Support House in Fort Smith are offering a free prostate cancer screening tomorrow from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Reynolds Cancer Support House on South M Street. Free appointments can be scheduled at the Reynolds Cancer Support House Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large. September is Hunger Action Month, and this year food insecurity has increased across the nation because of the pandemic. To help address hunger among children, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is issuing a waiver to help schools continue feeding kids through the end of the year. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The USDA's Food and Nutrition Service is extending a suite of nationwide waivers for the Summer Food Service Program and Seamless Summer Option through the end of 2020 or until funding runs out. This includes allowing meals to be served in all areas and at no cost, permitting meals to be served outside of typically required group settings and meal times, waiving meal pattern requirements as necessary, and allowing parents and guardians to pick up meals for their children. Ali Marachek, Director of Child Nutrition for Fayetteville Public Schools, says this is just the latest in a series of waivers that have come down since March.
The most recent waiver is for us to continue our seamless summer program, so our summer program that we normally offer through the school year, which extends our free meals to anyone birth to 18 years of age, whether they're affiliated with Fayetteville Public Schools, whether they live in Fayetteville, anyone can come get a free meal from us.
FPS is offering the meals through its 5-day meal pack program.
We do ask for a pre-order, but it's been going very well so far. And so families affiliated with Fayetteville Public Schools can use our existing My School Bucks, the pre-order. And then community members not affiliated with Fayetteville Public Schools, they'll just call our office and we'll add them to the list every week. It's pretty simple. We just ask if they would like milk with their meal and what time they'd like to pick it up. We've added an evening pickup time. So, and it's easy as that.
Through the program, the district can provide 5 breakfasts and 5 lunches for a total of 10 meals per child per week. Because it's open to any child, Maracek says a parent who has one student enrolled in school and perhaps a two-year-old at home can also get meals for the two-year-old through this initiative. The district is not responsible for raising any additional funding for the extra meals. They just claim the meals and receive federal reimbursement. Maracek says opting into the new waiver is a win-win situation.
It's really great for our program to opt into that because we're feeding more kids. That brings more reimbursement into my program and our district. So we're meeting needs and funding our program.
According to a press release from the USDA, the department has been asked to fund the initiative through the entire school year, but says, quote, "We are obligated to not spend more than is appropriated by Congress," end quote. The summer waiver extensions are based on current data estimations. Over 6 months, partners across the country have supported nearly 80,000 sites, handing out meals at a higher reimbursement rate than the traditional school year program. Allie Maracek, Director of Child Nutrition for Fayetteville Public Schools, says her district has been able to serve thousands of meals since schools first closed in the spring.
Since the shutdown of Fayetteville Public Schools on March 16th through the beginning of August, so through our summer program, we have served over 165,000 meals on 109 serving days. And it was the largest summer program we've ever had. I mean, we served about three times what we normally do. So I do think the need is there and probably increasing because it will take some time for our communities to recover. So we're happy to be there.
Maracek says they're still finalizing numbers for how many students are qualified for free and reduced lunches for the school year. At the end of last year, FPS was at about 38%. 3 weeks into the new school year, that number is already at 31%, and she expects it to go up.
The need has increased. We're seeing families that, you know, we kind of know our families, you know, we get to know them in the serving lines and everything. And so we've had new families call, and, you know, they'll call or they'll come to the site and they'll just, you know, they're very honest. They're like, "I've never done this before. How do I apply for meal benefits? How do I order these meal packs? I'm here. What do I do?" And we're very happy to educate them on the process. I mean, it's kind of nice to have conversations on the phone and explain the whole process and the program because it can be sometimes a complicated program, but we're here to simplify and, you know, increase access to these things.
More information about enrolling in the free meals program is available by visiting fayar.net or by calling 479-684-5091. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The USDA is continuing to take steps to ensure people are being fed. On September 21st, the USDA announced the extension of more than a dozen flexibilities to help participants in the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for women, infants, and children continue receiving food and health support during the pandemic. Without the extension, the flexibilities would have expired at the end of the month. More information on these waivers, along with those that have been approved since the start of the pandemic, available at fns.usda.gov/coronavirus. And still come in our second half hour of today's Ozarks at Large, a guide to the insects we hear as summer has turned into fall, an entomological guide to our woods ahead. Governor Asa Hutchinson is thinking about winter. At yesterday's press briefing in Little Rock, the governor outlined a strategy to help slow cold weather spread of the coronavirus. As the state's emergency because of the pandemic stretches into a seventh month, the governor says Arkansans should prepare for a continued state of emergency.
We're going to be living with COVID for some time, but as everyone knows, we're increasing our activity from school to sports. And we want to continue that, but we can't lose focus of our strategy. So I wanted to outline some of our winter strategies. And first of all, our goal is to increase public flu shot participation.
The governor says he is, in fact, receiving his flu shot today. He is also setting a goal of 1 million PCR COVID-19 tests administered in Arkansas by October 20th. The state has conducted more than 897,000 tests so far. Other goals include more consistency with contact tracing and the continued wearing of masks and the continued practice of social distancing.
While we're tired of it and we get numb by the talking about it, it is still effective. It is necessary. We're adopting it, but we cannot lose that focus. And the school children have really set the example for us. Wearing masks at school, not intimidated by it. They do that. Young people do that. We have to continue to follow that very helpful practice.
And one final goal from the governor for the winter: do not grow weary, he says. As the briefings have shifted from daily to weekly, the amount of information in one session has grown. Yesterday, the governor yielded the lectern to members of his cabinet for updates on education, health, corrections, and commerce. Johnny Key, Arkansas's Secretary of Education, says his department is tracking how each school district in the state is handling an unusual school year, now 5 weeks into the academic calendar.
And during that time, we have seen 106 schools that have had some type of modified operations since the school began. The good news is 83 of those have already moved back to normal operation. We currently have 23 schools that have some type of modification, which could include blended learning or virtual learning for their school. It could also include a classroom. It could include a grade level. It could go up to include the entire school or district. So it's a very fluid situation.
Secretary Key says one of the current school district alterations is because of a broken water line and not because of the pandemic. Solomon Gray, Secretary of Corrections, says Arkansas this month resumed taking male inmates into the state's correctional facilities after pausing that process in early June.
We're currently bringing inmates in cohorts of 48. Those inmates are being held in quarantine for 14 days. During the course of their 14-day quarantine, they will be tested at a minimum of 3 times, one of those upon intake, once at the approximate halfway point, and the final test being administered about 2 to 3 days before they complete their 14-day quarantine. If an inmate tests positive, then they are held in isolation for an additional period of time, along with those inmates who were exposed to them in their cohort group.
He says there are currently 379 active cases of the virus among the state's inmates. That is down from the end of July peak of 1,001 active cases. Mike Preston, Arkansas's Secretary of Commerce, says the state is in the second week of 3 weeks of approved pandemic unemployment assistance of $300 per week out of FEMA funds for eligible applicants. Preston says there continues to be an overall gradual reduction in those needing unemployment help.
Roughly about 37,000 continued claims on unemployment, about 42,000 on the pandemic unemployment. This is the lowest that we've been since probably early May, late April. So the numbers are continuing in the right direction, which means people are getting back to work in a safe, secure manner.
And even though the governor began yesterday's briefing with discussion of strategies for winter, the session ended with discussion of an autumn tradition, Halloween. He says the holiday is not canceled, not that he could even do that, he says, but he says the same practices health officials have stressed for the past 7.5 months should be used for that upcoming holiday as well.
We don't want Halloween gatherings of 200, 300 people in a gymnasium and without having a plan approved by the Department of Health. So we will have more to say about Halloween as we get closer, but Halloween will not be canceled this year.
The entire press briefing can be viewed at the governor's YouTube page. This is Ozarks at Large, and this is a fundraising week at 91.3 KUAF during our autumn fundraiser at the radio station. No doubt it has been a challenging several months. There's absolutely no doubt of that. At times, the news can seem overwhelming, but as an involved and caring citizen, you deserve to know the full truth. KUAF has kept you current on world news and reported on local, regional, state, and national campaigns and elections. We've provided you with up-to-date healthcare and education information, and we've delved deep into the social justice movement and racism debates that swept the nation. Together, we've navigated an extraordinary time. You've relied on KUAF to keep you involved and to keep you informed. You've trusted KUAF to always be here for you. But KUAF and Ozarks at Large also rely on you. Your gift, along with the donations of listeners from all over and right here in our region, help make this service even better for everyone. If you can, take just a moment now to show your support for everything KUAF and Ozarks at Large has brought to you in 2020 and will continue to do so in 2021. You can make a contribution of support right now at supportkuaf.com. And we have another Ozarks at Large specific challenge for this Wednesday. Kurt Stamp of Fayetteville is offering a $200 challenge for this hour of Ozarks at Large. This is open to anyone who can contribute. If it's your first ever contribution, your amount that you choose counts towards that $200 challenge. If you have been with us since Ozarks at Large has gone daily, 10 plus years, your contribution counts. If you've been giving since I've been hosting Ozarks at Large, 30 and a half years, it's a long time, isn't it? That contribution goes toward our Kurt Stamp challenge as well. In short, any contribution made in any amount during this hour of Ozarks at Large on this Wednesday in September counts towards the $200 challenge from our generous and long-serving friend, Kurt Stamp. You can make the contribution, again, in the amount that you know you can make. You can do that right now at supportkuaf.com. And you know what? If you can contribute a gift of $120 or become a sustaining member for $10 or more a month, we'll also send you a KUAF Public Radio Nerd coffee mug as a thanks for your generosity and your contribution. You can enjoy your coffee in style while helping KUAF bring you a whole year of programs you enjoy every day. And inside that coffee, we're going to put a special edition of Ozarks at Large coffee brewed by our friends at Arcega's. It's a one-time brew that many of us at Ozarks at Large got together and through a taste test put together through their help at Arcega's. So you get the coffee, you get the mug for a one-time gift of $120 or a monthly sustaining gift of $10 a month or more. Just go to supportkuaf.com to make your gift online. And by the way, if you make that gift for the mug and the coffee right now during this hour of Ozarks at Large, yes, that counts towards our challenge from Kurt Stamp of $200. Supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
For more than 30 years, you have turned to KUAF and Ozarks at Large for important, insightful, and intelligent news about our community. This fall, KUAF is turning to you. We're raising money during the month of September to keep Ozarks at Large and all the important programs you rely on every day on the air. Listeners who give to the station provide more than 75% of our funding. You can be a part of our fall fundraising month and make a difference to your public radio station. Make a gift today at supportkuaf.com. Thank you.
That's the voice of Raven Cook, a familiar one for regular listeners of Ozarks at Large. She'll be back in a few minutes on this edition of Ozarks with this week's Reflections in Black. And a reminder, if you contribute at supportkuaf.com during this or any hour of Ozarks at Large between now and Friday's noon show, you will be eligible to win the 8 books Raven recommended this summer on our show. The books are at the Dixon Street Bookshop in Fayetteville right now. You'll be able to pick them up there. You can also enter, if you've already given or you would like to enter without giving, by sending an email to member@kuaf.com. In early September, 18 Arkansas lawmakers and 7 citizens filed a lawsuit against Arkansas Secretary of Health Jose Romero to end a COVID-19 public health emergency declared March 11th by Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. If overturned, the emergency executive order authorized by Arkansas Code 20-7-110 would cease, ending a long list of protective directives and mandates. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spoke with the lead plaintiff, Republican State Representative Dan Sullivan from District 53 in Northeast Arkansas. Sullivan says state bureaucrats should not be in charge of state emergencies.
State Representative Dan Sullivan says Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, in declaring a public health emergency now in place for 7 months, completely bypassed due process.
There is already in place and has been in place an emergency rulemaking process where if the Secretary of Health decides that there is a health emergency, all he has to do is contact the legislature, and he can come before the legislature almost immediately to promulgate emergency health rules.
Referring to 24 COVID-19 directives and enforceable orders in Arkansas, ranging from mask wearing to how businesses, schools, and medical providers operate, which Sullivan categorizes as laws.
So when the executive branch starts making law and then enforcing law, we believe they've overstepped their power. So that's one part of the lawsuit. The second part of the lawsuit says that the governor has overstepped his authority to declare an emergency. The Arkansas Constitution says that the governor can rightly declare an emergency with the emergency powers. It says that the governor can rightly extend that. It doesn't say he can extend it multiple times.
The day the lawsuit was filed, Governor Asa Hutchinson, during one of his coronavirus press briefings, immediately responded.
This actions that I have taken during the emergency is based upon what has been approved by the Arkansas General Assembly that gives the authority for a governor, a chief executive, to manage an emergency and to act quickly. At least seven of the legislators that are named in the suit were on the Legislative Council at the time the rule was approved, which allows the Department of Health to issue the directives that are in question today. And so that was in December of 2018, and the legislature wisely approved those rules that gives authority to the Department of Health and the executive branch to act during this emergency.
Hutchinson disagrees with the lawsuit's premise that claims a General Assembly must first review, then change or reject pandemic guidelines and directives prior to issuance.
Even though my great respect for members of the General Assembly, they bring a great deal of expertise, I don't know any of them who are as qualified in public health matters as our epidemiologists and our public health leaders at the Department of Health.
Sullivan disagrees.
So to make that statement is really a misdirection, and it's a straw man is what it is, because it's not what the issue is about. The issue is about having the experts come to the legislature, and we all talk about that. The legislature may have experts also.
Hutchinson says as governor elected by Arkansans, he's accountable to the people, especially during a nationally declared emergency. This lawsuit, he says, is supported by a small minority of legislators, evidenced by lack of any majority legislative action against his emergency rule.
The legislators have power to end the emergency if they chose to do so. They could do it by concurrent resolution, which means they can call a meeting of the two bodies, and by concurrent resolution, they can end the emergency.
Hutchinson also says if his emergency order is overturned by the court, his protective rules for schools, healthcare, business, the economy, and public welfare will go away.
It doesn't mean any of those things go away.
Sullivan argues the peer review committee of the Arkansas Legislative Council, if his lawsuit prevails, will be charged with approving the current emergency directives and mandates by majority vote.
Early on, we didn't know what we faced, and it was a true emergency. And of course, an emergency is predicated with a disaster. And there was a disaster, and it's still serious, but now we know what we're facing. And there is time to react, there is time to do other things and have that debate with the elected representatives of the people. So the governor is essentially, through his executive order, has not told the legislators to go sit on the bench. He's told us to go sit in the stands and watch the game.
The governor also called for full disclosure on who has contributed money to pay litigation costs, but Sullivan says the lawsuit is citizen-led and citizen-funded.
I know we encourage, if folks would ask, we would certainly encourage them to support, but we did not collect money. We did not distribute the money. We didn't write the check. That was all done by private citizens.
Sullivan confirms that money to pay for the lawsuit was raised by the Northeast Arkansas Tea Party and Reopen Arkansas, two conservative interest groups. He says a cap was placed after $10,000 was raised to pay attorney Travis Story to research and file the lawsuit. Sullivan says he doesn't know if any more money has been raised beyond that. Asked why he's pressing forward with this, Sullivan cited a constituent who's chronically barred from working due to allergies, not COVID.
And he has now missed over 10 weeks, laid off, hasn't had COVID, but he's been sent home without pay, and they've exhausted all their savings.
He also says he was contacted by a Veterans of Foreign War post, threatened with shutdown by the state due to noncompliance with emergency social distancing rules.
Those folks are being told they can't dance. That's against the rule.
COVID-19 experts recommend the public not gather in crowds or to sing together or dance together to reduce transmission of virus-laden respiratory droplets.
And again, we're not trying to take the power away. We're not trying to open it up. We just want to have, we think that debate should be open with representatives that we hear from for people.
The state has 30 days until October 3rd to respond to the lawsuit filed in Pulaski County Circuit Court. Judge Wendell Griffin will decide the case. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station. 2020 has been an incredibly different year. It's been different for many of us that work on the show, including Raven Cook, who's working from home these days. She's also been recording Reflections in Black segments for us from her home studio, including this one.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Working in museums as an educator, I am frequently suiting up for battle. The battle is not physical or even something you can see. The battle revolves around the work of bringing light to blind eyes and equipping our young people, our next generation of leaders, with all the tools necessary to make a better world. There are moments, however, that I don't have words, so I look to books from incredible Black writers for help. One book that has been on my conscience lately is The Origin of Others by the late, great Toni Morrison. In the introduction of the text that prepares readers for the intensity of the book, author Ta-Nehisi Coates writes, "Racism matters. To be an other in this country matters. And the disheartening truth is that it will likely continue to matter." He continues with reminding us, "To understand why we find ourselves here again, we are fortunate to have Toni Morrison, one of the finest writers and thinkers this country has ever produced." Toni Morrison begins the writing with a story from her childhood that set her on a path of really exploring the construct of race. The first chapter, which she titles Romancing Slavery, dives into the historical narrative of how this concept of otherness became so common in the American consciousness. This chapter reveals the horrors of chattel slavery, the ways in which slave owners would validate their repulsive actions with science, religion, and entertainment. This work shatters the illusions of Harriet Beecher Stowe's 19th century Uncle Tom's Cabin and leaves audiences questioning more to come. Throughout the text, Toni Morrison stands toe-to-toe with literary titans as she is one herself, revealing with ease the darker realities behind some of literature's most beloved books. She eloquently presents her arguments and uses her canon of fiction literature to deal with the darkest parts of American racism. Morrison writes, "So when we speak or write of the stranger, the outsider, the other, we should keep in mind what the relationship signifies. The narratives of slaves, both written and spoken, are critical to understanding the process of othering. Several of their narratives begin in childhood, with descriptions of love for and devotion to their original owners and deep sorrow at being sold away. The innocence of children, owned and owners alike, is a staple of slave narratives, idealized in theaters, commercial and artistic books, posters, and newspapers. It is only later, as they approach puberty, that an alternate universe is revealed. but it is a universe in which being literally enslaved, being the despised and abused other, shines its most revealing light on the enslavers, those who relished, maintained, and profited from the so-called peculiar institution. Later in the text, she explores community, place, Blackness, and the violence surrounding Black Americans in the chapter Configurations of Blackness. She writes, "The United States in the 20th century had not moved away from eugenics, nor had there been a significant lull in lynchings. Photographs of dead Black bodies surrounded by happy white onlookers appeared in print, and postcards of lynchings were a popular item. The fear that Black people had was not a fantasy or a pathological condition." She uses her book, Paradise, to continue a conversation around drawing attention to specific individuals to escape harm and mitigate their failures. The writing of Toni Morrison does the work of revealing to Americans themselves, and her books anchor us to a voice that spoke to the root of the problem in hopes that we, as a country, as a world, could be better.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can find past editions at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
Reflections in Black with Raven Cook has been part of our Wednesday Ozarks at Large for over a year now. And if you listened this summer, you heard Raven recommend 8 different books, including The Origin of Others by Toni Morrison. And during this on-air fundraiser week at 91.3 KUAF, if you make a contribution during Ozarks at Large, the noon edition or the 7 p.m. edition, you can win the entire list of books recommended by Raven Cook. We have a partner in the Dixon Street Bookstore on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. They have the entire list of Raven's picks for learning more about Black history in America waiting for the winner at their location in Fayetteville. Titles include Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, Tears We Cannot Stop, Michael Eric Dyson, The Origin of Others, Toni Morrison, The Fire Next Time, James Baldwin, W.E.B. Du Bois' The Souls of Black Folk, 8 books in all. If you've already supported the station this month or would like to enter this giveaway without giving, you can send us an email to member@kuaf.com to be entered. We will draw for a winner of Raven's Reading List books during our noon show on Friday, September 25th. So you'll want to enter before our noon show on Friday. When you contribute at supportkuaf.com, you'll be supporting Reflections in Black and all your favorite moments on Ozarks at Large. You can give a gift right now at supportkuaf.com. And remember, if you're able and you'd like, and you can make a one-time gift of $120 or $10 a month or more as a sustaining member, then you also, if you would like, receive an Ozarks at Large NPR Radio Nerd mug that will have Ozarks at Large coffee in the mug. It's a special edition of coffee that was made by our Segas with input from members of the Ozarks at Large staff. So you can enjoy your coffee in style. Best of all, you'll be helping KUAF bring you an entire year of programs that you can enjoy every day. Go to supportkuaf.com to make your gift online. That, again, is for a one-time gift of $120 or becoming a sustaining member at $10 a month or more. You do that and then click that you would like the mug and the coffee. And if you contribute during Ozarks at Large, you're automatically in the giveaway for the 8 books that are on Raven Cook's reading recommended list. So you can do all that at supportkuaf.com. And you're also supporting the great radio that you listen to throughout the year, be it Ozarks at Large, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, or the great music that KUAF provides. Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsburg every Friday night, Jazz Scoop with Rob Wells every Saturday night. There are all kinds of music programs that we provide, as well as Peter Vandegraaff, who will have great classical music every Sunday through Thursday night, beginning at 8 after the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. You pick the amount, you pick the method. You can even send us a message if you want by going to supportkuaf.com. And from all of us that work at Ozarks at Large and 91.3 KUAF, indeed, thank you very much.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support comes from Malco Theaters, with locations in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, Van Buren, and the Fayetteville IMAX Theater. Malco gift cards available at all locations and online at malco.com. The Peel Compton Foundation presents School Days, an online educational series. Video, interactive activities, virtual tours, and more will align with the Arkansas Department of Education curriculum standards for fourth grade students. Registration and free content available at peelcompton.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Once again, thanks to everyone who has contributed during this on-air fundraising this week and everyone who has contributed this month and in the past. If you haven't yet, you can do so at supportkuaf.com. This is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Today is the first full day of autumn. It arrived yesterday morning at 8:31. And to celebrate, we bring you a nocturne in four movements featuring an ensemble of forest singers. Don Steinkraus, a professor of entomology at the University of Arkansas for 30 years, conducts, and he begins with Dusk.
Those are scissor grinder cicadas. They sound like someone grinding scissors on a sharpening wheel. And those are male cicadas, and they're up in the trees, and they live in the soil for years as nymphs and suck on tree roots. And then they come out, and most people have seen the shells of a cicada on a tree where they've shed their shell, and then the winged adult comes out and goes up the tree, and it sings to meet the females. But that's a particular type of annual cicada. There's also periodical cicadas, which occur every 13 years in the south and every 17 years in the north. Now, we don't have those right now. This is an annual cicada. Well, did you hear how that faded? It's because it takes a lot of energy to sing if you're a cicada. And they get tired, and then they have to stop for a while and then restart up again. And the females are recognizing who's a good, strong singer. So they can judge and say, this is a really strong male, and I'll go try to find him. A couple hours later, as it gets darker, and this is what turns them on. When it's dark, they start singing. You start hearing all the Orthoptera. That is the katydids, the crickets all begin to sing. Now, there are crickets that sing in the daytime, and there are katydids singing in the daytime, but most of them sing at night. And so when it gets dark enough, you get this transition between cicadas to katydids and other Orthoptera. And so what you're hearing now is this background noise of many, many crickets all singing, and then also katydids in the trees. So now at about midnight, you're hearing still the background noise of many, many thousands of crickets in the ground, like on the ground. And then up in the trees, you're still hearing the true katydid. That's the true katydid that you're hearing there. And they can occur in vast numbers and make a tremendous racket. But they're a very special insect. I want to point out, none of these insects, cicadas, true katydids, crickets, they are not pests, really. A lot of people think insects are pests. These things are not. They're just a really beautiful part of nature. And so these true katydids are up there singing. They can't fly. And most people don't see them very often. They're a very big green insect, which looks just like a leaf. If you see one, you'll say, man, that is a great leaf mimic. So they're up high in the trees, and they don't fly. So a lot of people never see them because they don't come down to the ground that often. And The female lays her eggs in twigs. And then in the spring, those eggs will hatch and little baby ones come out and start to cycle over again. Okay, so about 2 o'clock in the morning, most of these insects are winding down for the night. The crickets aren't. You'll hear the crickets all night. But the katydids seem to stop around 1 to 2 a.m. And all these insects are also cold-blooded. So as the temperature drops in the night, they move slower. They are less able to sing. So temperature has a big effect on their ability to sing. But the katydids have stopped. But the crickets will continue all night long.
Don Steinkraus, who was an entomology professor at the University of Arkansas for 30 years, leading us through the sounds of insects just outside our homes. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Bonanza, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Wednesday afternoon edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich. Jacqueline also produced the piece we just heard about insects. Raven Cook, host and writer of Reflections in Black. Timothy Dennis produced that segment of Reflections in Black. He also produced today's show from the Harold and Blanche Cox studio next door. We're socially distanced. He has a mask on, but it's good to have Timothy back in the building today. On tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, Zuzana Sitek explains to us how firefighters from this area have gone west to help with the raging wildfires there. Plus, the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report with Paul Gatling, Sound Perimeter with Leah Uribe, and more. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. KUAF brings you the big picture and the intimate focus, the stories that affect thousands or millions or even just one. And because what matters in any story is the human element, we bring you that. To better understand an event, we must realize its human impact. We need to hear the perspective of those who are involved, even if they differ. In the rush to break a story, that human element is often overlooked by commercial media, but that's where public broadcasting excels. That's why KUAF is so important to you. Whether it's an international crisis or a local dispute, KUAF will bring you the human element, an all-important perspective. You can make sure that continues with your gift of support this afternoon, right now, to KUAF. You can give right now at supportkuaf.com. And we still have a few minutes for you to help us meet that challenge from our friend Kurt Stamp of Fayetteville. We started this hour with a $200 Ozarks at Large hour specific challenge. $200. You don't have to do it all on your own. We're all working together. If we get $200 together, Kurt Stamp puts in his $200 and it's worth $400 to 91.3 KUAF. We met the challenge from Kurt on Monday. We met it on Tuesday. Love to meet it on Wednesday. You can help us meet that challenge with your contribution in the amount of your choosing at supportkuaf.com. You can also become a sustaining member at kuaf.com. And a reminder that if you contribute during any hour of Ozarks at Large, up until our Friday noon edition of the show, you will be automatically entered to win the entire list of books recommended this summer on Reflections in Black by Raven Cook. Those books are waiting for the winner at Dixon Street Bookstore on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The books include Austin Channing Brown's I'm Still Here, as I mentioned before, Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. There are 8 books in all. Everyone who contributes during an hour of Ozarks at Large, be it noon or 7 p.m., is automatically entered. If you've already supported the station this month or you'd just like to enter the giveaway without giving, you can do that. Just send an email to member@kuaf.com to be entered. We will draw for the winner on our noon edition of Ozarks at Large on Friday. When you contribute, you're supporting Reflections in Black. You're supporting Ozarks at Large, but also All Things Considered, Morning Edition, all of the services that 91.3 KUAF gives. You can support us right now at supportkuaf.com. Appreciate everybody who has given so far during this on-air fundraiser. The fundraising month continues through the month of September. We've reserved 5 days. It began on Monday. We'll continue through Friday night up until 7 with the on-air fundraiser when we come to you with these breaks in between stories and interviews to remind you that the reason we can be here, the reason we can tell the stories we do, is because of support from listeners like you. If you've never given before, it's pretty easy. It takes a couple of minutes at supportkuaf.com. Usually during the middle of the day, during these noon editions of Ozarks at Large, I give you a phone number. But because of the pandemic, we are keeping the Carver Center for Public Radio off limits to anybody who is not a full-time staff member. So it's just the staff. And even then, it's not all of us at once in the building. So you can't call this time. We don't have phone volunteers, whom we miss. But you can make a contribution online at supportkuaf.com. And again, importantly, remember, the amount is up to you. Thanks to Kurt Stamp for making that $200 Ozarks at Large challenge today. Stay tuned. I bet we have another one tomorrow, but we'd like to meet this one today. Our Ozarks at Large theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find out more about Daryl at his Facebook and Instagram feeds. He's often playing live there around 4 o'clock each afternoon. His most recent CD is titled Safe and Sound. There's also DarylSean.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Wednesday with us. We'll be back tonight at 7. Take care of yourself.